The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, volunteers, board, or underwriters.
Okay, well, it's time for Out of the Box.
Yeah, y'all comfy.
I'm one of your hosts, Dave Giroux.
Hey, Dave. This is Jonathan Jay.
Welcome to the show.
Everybody get all comfy because we got 2 hours of jam-packed stuff for you here today.
Yeah, we got hopefully an interesting show for you today. We're going to be talking about some stuff going on in the world here for a little bit. Then we got
recent crashes, leaks, bashes, stockpiles, birthdays, second American revolutions. We got the KIC meeting coming up. There's all kinds of stuff to report.
Yeah, and then at 5 o'clock, Gary Hooser is going to call in. We're going to be discussing the pesticide and GMO bill in front of the county council.
Mm-hmm.
And also going to be having an update. Actually, somebody's in town talking about militarization of space.
Yeah, drones. The drone race.
The drones in space.
I guess that comes next, huh?
Yeah.
First, the drones have to come home, and then they're going to monitor us, you know, see what you're doing in your backyard and everything. And then, I guess they go into space.
So, Bruce Gagnon will be is on island, actually. We're going to be talking with him about talk he's giving here.
Mm-hmm. That'll be at 4:45. And then at 4:30, we'll be talking with Megan Wong about what happened, what went down in Paula Holly about a month ago.
Yeah. Okay, well, so let's see. Let's just start off with some news, I guess. You had an announcement then on the KIUC meeting. You want to talk about that first?
I did. I wanted to actually, before I said that, I wanted to wish everybody who has a birthday in July a happy birthday, because we did all the June babies last month. And you know, guess what? More people have their birthdays in July. My neighbor, my niece, my sister, and my girlfriend all have their birthdays within 2 days of each other. So happy birthday to all y'all and to all everyone else, too.
And right. Today is 7/11.
Yeah, you were saying earlier that's a Masonic day.
Yeah, Masonic day. Yeah, 9/11, 3/11, 7/11, they're all Masonic dates. Infamy.
What's the significance of them?
Well, that's just when they do their dirty deeds.
On the 11th.
On the 11th. So it seems like it's very coincidental that all these really nasty things happen on dates that are important for Masonic purposes.
Hmm.
Coincidence, I'm sure.
Well, here's another date to mark in your calendar, and that's Thursday, July 18th. Because at 6 p.m., KIUC is going to be having their membership meeting for the year 2013. It's going to be at the Kauai Community College Performing Arts Center. And you can get your update on the co-op's work to generate 50% of Kauai's energy through renewable resources by the year 2023. And whatever else they are up to. And then you can also give them peace of your mind for whatever else you figure they should be doing that they're not. It should be a nice, healthy discussion.
And do you get a bag of rice if you go?
I think the first 250 people get a bag of rice and maybe a
shopping bag. Last time I got a shopping bag.
Yeah, a little shopping bag. I'm not sure if they're still giving out compact fluorescent light bulbs still. Just show up early.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's at 6 p.m., and that's at KCC on Thursday, July 18th.
Cool. Okay, let's see. Then let's jump into the news now. It is interesting. There's a bunch of stuff going on here. There was a train wreck in Lac Mégantic, Canada, somewhere in Quebec.
Yeah, the first time I saw that, I thought it was a maglev train that had crashed.
Oh, yeah, it's a weird name. I'm not sure what that means. Probably some French name. It's in Quebec. A runaway train. I guess a train parked above this one town, and they left it one of the engines running so that the brakes would work, and somehow they didn't work, and it just started rolling downhill and went through this town, and then went around the corner. It was going way too fast. Went around the corner.
Went sploosh, didn't it?
And It derailed, you know, upset 75 cars full of crude oil.
Yeah, that's a mess.
Which then ignited into a big, huge fireball.
Dear.
And
sticky fireball, too.
Yeah. And, you know, the oil was just flowing in, filling up basements and sewer lines and like that. And just fried half of the downtown area of this city. Just a small town.
But can you imagine how terrible that would be if a trait load full of train comes and suddenly just starts dumping all this crude oil into your town?
Yeah, that's not very good.
Talk about a mess.
Killed probably 60 people or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it is bad.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
Then, just a day or two ago, plane crashed at San Francisco Airport.
Which is kind of amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, you don't hear about that very often anymore. It seems like a pretty safe way to go. Is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, from the reports that I heard, it's amazing that there weren't more people who died in the plane crash.
Oh, yeah. I saw the video of it. Some guy was just sitting there with his camera watching planes land, and all of a sudden, wow, that one's running pretty low. Oh, wow, it hit the brake wall. And it just cartwheeled down the runway, did a whole 360. And
seriously?
Yeah, and fortunately, only two people died.
Yeah, that's what's amazing to me.
That is amazing.
That's incredible.
But it was kind of strange. There's some interesting, you know, weird things about this. The pilot who was flying the plane had never flown a 777 before. He was in training. There was another more experienced pilot that was there who has never been an instructor before. He was there as the instructor, but he has never been an instructor before. And also, as it was coming in too low, too slow, they said they flipped on the automatic speed adjustment so that it would keep up to speed. Then all he had to really worry about was, keeping it level or hitting the runway. And but the velocity, the speed of the plane was too low, so something happened that the automatic speed adjustment didn't work. All these things went wrong all at the same time.
You know, it seems like there were some failures.
There was definitely some failures. I guess it was a South Korean jet.
Asiana.
Yeah. So it makes you kind of wonder. And it seems like what kind of leads me to believe is that the company was trying to, I don't know, save money by using less experienced pilots to fly these things. They want to do it all by autopilot, takeoff and landing, everything from autopilot. And then they just put in some computer geek in there to make sure the computer's working, and then they don't really need to pay top dollar for an experienced pilot.
Well, it seems to me events like this sort of underscore the value of having a talented and skilled experienced pilot at the wheel.
Right. Well, maybe they'll get that message. But let's see, another one. There's another big oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Now, I had not heard about this one yet.
Yeah, it just happened a couple of days ago. It was they were drilling a well and a big explosion. They had to evacuate the platform, a big, huge oil slick down the Gulf, plumes of natural gas being released to the atmosphere. It's pretty ugly down there. And, the Gulf of Mexico is already severely
pristine.
Degraded.
Are you going to say pristine?
It's no longer pristine.
No longer.
It's, after the last one, the last 20 of them or whatever, it's just a dead zone down there in many parts of the Gulf of Mexico. It's an environmental disaster.
Well, it's also the inevitable consequence of our rapacious demand for power and energy.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's also the message in the train wreck also, all that oil moving around. Got to have that oil.
So it's not safe at the pump. It's not safe on the train. Is it safe on the pipeline?
No, pipelines actually have been leaking all over the place here lately.
Huh.
It's not safe anywhere.
Huh.
So,
unsafe at any speed.
We got to get away from these. Or, you would think that they would be able to extract oil from the ground, process it and transport it in a safe manner.
Well,
but they
don't
seem to be able to do that.
It's not like
they don't want to spend the money it costs to do it safely. They just do it on the cheap so they make more money.
Well, but it's also like every drop of oil that they spill on the ground is a drop they don't get to sell. So there's a profit motive in there somewhere.
Still, they must figure though
we're
that
not perfect,
as long as they keep the spillage down to under 50%, then they're going to make their money anyway or something.
Yeah, maybe so.
I don't know. It seems pretty.
Now, do you think that there have been more spills and more disasters lately, or is that just an example of the way the news can magnify things?
I think there's more now. Imagine what happened, or recall what happened in Alaska and Valdez when that tanker went down. That was the biggest spill of all time, or something like that.
I think it was one of the drunker spills of all time.
Yeah, definitely. But now that happens all the time, and people just don't even blank on, you know, it's like, oh, you know, oh, another one. Oh, well. We'll just have to drill more wells. Okay, and then another one here, the Fukushima disaster is continuing. Huge releases of radiation have been spiking up to 100 times normal levels
cesium,
just in the last couple of days.
Cesium levels
cesium
or iodine levels?
Cesium levels.
Cesium.
Yeah, and they're continuously dumping water into the Pacific Ocean. It's showing up in our fish. So that whole situation is out of control. There's three melted down reactor cores burrowing into the ground. Totally, they don't know where they are. They just keep pouring water on it, keep it cool. Hopefully it doesn't explode or something like that. But it'll be a generation before they can locate those things and extract them from the ground.
And how's that going to happen?
How will it happen? I have no idea. And neither does anybody else, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
I mean, look at Chernobyl, that Chernobyl accident. All they did...
Look at it from a safe distance.
All they did with that... is
they just dump concrete.
Well, interesting. When I saw them flying over that thing when it was just after it happened, and you can see nuclear chain reaction going on exposed to the atmosphere. I mean, usually this is done in very confined situations and contained situations, just burning up in the atmosphere. I mean, it's really sickening to see. The only thing they were able to do then was to just pour concrete. Just fly over with a helicopter, drop concrete on it. And it took years for the concrete to even set up. And now it's all breaking apart again, so they're trying to put another building around it. So here it is. That happened in the 80s, so we're 30 years later, and they still haven't gone in there and done anything to the fuel.
Oh, I imagine it's still pretty hot.
They're just continuing to try and enclose it or keep something on top of it. But once it reaches a certain point, there's nothing you can do. It's out of control.
Huh.
So all these out of control situations going on right now, this is not good news here. Here's one more not good news item, and then I've got some good news.
Yeah, I was going to say, we want to make sure to keep it balanced.
Right,
here.
Yeah. This, in Syria, the real Syrian army.
You mean Bashar al-Assad's army?
Assad's army took over this one town, and they discovered a huge stockpile of chemical weapons.
From the rebels. From the rebels.
Yeah.
So what does Obama have to say about that stockpile of chemical weapons?
I haven't heard him say anything about that. You know, the Russians have been bringing this up to the UN.
I imagine
saying,
look
at what's going on here. This is what they say was used. These are chemical precursors for chemical weapons, for, you know, nerve gas or something. And so they found a huge stockpile, enough to make enough of these chemicals to make enough chemical weapons to kill everybody in Syria. That's how much they had.
How many people are still alive in Syria?
Not as many as there used to be.
Like 100,000 people have been killed in the last 2 years
least,
or so.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I would imagine it's probably 20 million people in Syria to begin with or something like that. But there's enough chemical weapons here to kill everybody. And so these are our friends, our hired terrorists.
Hired goons.
That are running around Syria with enough chemical stockpile weapons to kill everybody in the entire country.
Well, I wonder what Joseph Lieberman would have to say about that.
I don't know, but where did they come from? I mean,
what are the receipts on them?
Who supplied these weapons to Syria, to the Syrian terrorists?
I don't know.
This ought to be, you know, a big deal. To have this much chemical weapons. Look at, they invaded Iraq, you know,
over
a lot less than this.
Over fictitious weapons.
So, the U.S. isn't making, Russia is making a big deal of it, going to the U.N. and trying to expose all this, but, U.S. does not seem to care, or, you know, maybe they feel like they should have been able to keep those weapons or something. I don't know.
So what's the good news?
Okay. Let's see. Actually, let me preface this for a couple of minutes then. You know, I've been thinking a lot lately how change needs to happen in this country. You know, the government appears to be out of control. But the politics in this country is so polarized these days that it's hard to imagine any constructive change will ever occur. Every election of the last 8 or 10 elections have all been 49% to 51%. Divided right down the middle.
Well, that's because of the way money goes in and goes into all the nooks and crannies and then makes sure that you have a polarized result.
Yeah. The parties are polarized. If the Democrats come up with something, the Republicans vote against it, even if it's something that they like. You know, everything is so polarized. Everything is just split right down the middle, and it's hard to imagine that any constructive change will occur in this country. And so
via this process.
By any political process, yeah.
Sure.
And so I was pretty disappointed by all that, and thinking that, you know, we need to make some change here, but it's unlikely to occur because of this. And I think it's partly by design. Like you say, the money flows.
I think it's not partly by design, Dave. I think it's the genius of American democracy. That's what I think it is.
Right. And so they, we're so divided, no change will happen. But in the meantime, you know, we got a government that's killing its own citizens, spying on its own people, torturing prisoners.
Now, hold on a second, Dave. You said this was the good news.
Yeah. And so, the government is out of control. So, I was thinking, how could change ever happen? How could we ever have a revolution in this country that would take hold, that would actually, bring people together, kind of thing? So
a non-polarizing revolution.
Right. And so I thought of one, of a way, of a set of principles that everybody could agree on.
Does it involve dancing?
No, it doesn't. But
because you should toss that in there, because people really like to dance.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's a. I'll make a note of that.
All right.
Okay. So, but one thing is, just to go back to the basics, go back to the Constitution, go back to the Bill of Rights, go back to the Declaration of Independence. Dust off those old dusty documents, and those are, you know, things that people hold in high regard everybody can agree on, and everybody can rally around and say, okay, we're going to take these documents and we're going to hold these to the letter.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, I won't use any names, but he was talking about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and I'd never heard anybody say this before, but he said, I think this is a quote, he said, they are divinely inspired documents. And I said, what? And he said, in my opinion, I think the guys, when they wrote this stuff out, I think they were channeling something. He said, I think that they are divinely inspired documents. I said, wow, okay. Very interesting. I've never heard anybody say that before.
I think if you believe in that sort of thing, that's fine. But I haven't seen any proof of that.
I just think that was his way of saying that he thought they were extremely groovy.
Yeah. I mean, they're darn good documents. They have good intentions and, you know, good. I mean, there's things that could be changed. You know, we ought to, you know, have term limits for Congress people, or, you know, for senators, stuff like that. I mean, there's changes that can be made. But, you know, I don't really trust anybody to make changes to them at this point because, I mean, who would you trust to change the Constitution now? I mean, you say, would you give Barack Obama the opportunity? Oh, go ahead and make a few changes here, pencil them in there we'll amend the Constitution. I mean, half the people in this country would not go for that.
It would seem like until Barack starts actually following the laws that you wouldn't really want him to be in charge of changing the laws.
Right, yeah. But who would you trust to change the Constitution, for example? You know,
I mean, is it a rhetorical question? Because I don't know.
I don't either.
Noam Chomsky.
I don't think there'd be any consensus.
Maybe
on
Noam
that,
Chomsky. I think he'd do a pretty good job.
Yeah, but, you know, he's kind of polarizing. Not everybody agrees with him.
That's,
you know,
true.
So,
but yes, that'd be my opinion.
I would trust him.
Yeah.
And there are some people that individuals might suggest, but I don't think there would be any consensus on it. Anyway, so things are so polarized, but I think this is something we can really rally around and come together on. People on the far right, the far left, down the middle, you know, Democrats, Republicans, everybody could agree that these are, you know, very good documents, and it would be in our best interest to go back to the full intentions of those documents. And so I started, you know, doing some research on the internet there and just thinking, you know, we could call this the Second American Revolution. You know, that's kind of a, you know, snappy title, and people could really jump on that. And so I found this one clip on YouTube the other day. from a gentleman called Gerald Salente. He's a he's got a company called the Trends Research Institute, where he looks at trends in on the planet, you know, in sociology and the economy and various things. And
so you got a clip from everyone to listen to?
And he predicts what the outcome might be based on, you know, historical precedents and basically the direction we're going. If, you know, if we keep going in this direction, you're going to end up down that road unless you change direction. So anyway, this clip from Gerald Salente I'm going to play. It's a few minutes here, so bear with him and us. And it's very entertaining, very informative here. So hope that you enjoy this.
Sure. And for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Out of the Box on KKCR. And here is Mr. Salente.
There are solutions. And the first solution is to remember and understand and look at what we got, how we got here, and where we're going. It doesn't take a trend forecaster to figure it out. We need a new direction and a new path. And what I want to do is begin with restoring America. I know the country wasn't great. We've had problems with slavery, and they were real. And discrimination, they're real. There were a lot of problems. They slaughtered the Indians. I know. But our ancestors came here also because it was the freest nation on earth. It was the nation where anybody from any level, from any country, any nationality could start at the bottom and go to the top. Now the rug's pulled out from us. The top is only for the 1%. There were great things about America. This was the land of quality. This was a country that nations around the world wanted to emulate for the freedoms that we the people had, that our founding fathers fought for. It wasn't just about money and the mafia controlling everything. I want to see a restoration of America. Restore America. Look at our cities. Look at Detroit. Look at Camden and Trenton. Look at East St. Louis. Look at Oakland. Look around the country. One great city declining after another. After our presidents, one after another, sold us out. The raping of our constitutional rights and the dissemination of all the laws that would have protected us from cheap labor, stealing all our jobs, taking down the trade barriers, sending our jobs overseas to communist China. When I was a kid, oh man, they hated communist China until we started doing business. Bring home the jobs, bring home the troops, rebuild America, and restore the nation with the principles of the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. So how do we restore America? How do we bring it back to its greatness? All right, number one, has to start with grassroots. Has to start with you. You're the first root to build yourself spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And I don't mean in a religious sense. Morality, the golden rule. Number two, buy local. Everything that you can. Number three, break the chains. They gave them a name, chain stores. They got you. Don't continue to support the corrupt systems. We need a new way. And the new way is the moral way. It's simple. It's as old as the Bible. It's as old as anything that you want to read or believe in. It's called the Golden Rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, I was in Germany opening up the Trends Journal, a German edition. It was in 2012. I was in Berlin, and as I looked at Berlin, I realized that before it was bombed out, it was probably grander than Paris. Wide boulevards. No building, probably over 14 stories, so sun was shining in everywhere. Sidewalks wide enough for cafe tables, four or five deep. People walking, and to bicycle. You take walk a couple of blocks, there's greenery around everywhere. A beautifully laid out city. And I'm thinking to myself, the Germans, how did this happen? The 1930s, the Germans were at the height of Western civilization, culturally, philosophically, scientifically. I'm thinking of the German names, Bach, Beethoven, Goethe, Wagner, Einstein, Marlene Dietrich, Fritz Lang. The Germans, highly educated, sophisticated people. I said to myself, as I'm looking at these buildings, a grand building from maybe 1880, and then all new construction from bombed out World War II Germany. And then another old building. And everywhere I look, the same thing, an old building like bookends, and new building between. I said, how could the Germans let a two-bit freak like Hitler destroy their country? Everything that took thousands of years to build was now destroyed and will never be the same. Hitler, a guy that Charlie Chaplin played better than he did, a cartoon character. And I thought to myself, I'm of Italian descent. Look at Mussolini. Look at the Italians. I mean, not for nothing. Da Vinci, Puccini, Verdi, Caruso. The names go on and on. How could they let a freak like Mussolini destroy their country? I said, what is it in the human spirit that allows this to happen? And I was down in Chile. You may have read the story. I talked about it on the air in 2010. I was looking to get out of here. I had enough of this crap in this country. I had enough of my rights being robbed from me. I'm tired of my money being stolen from me, like people like John the Slime Corzine of MF Global. I'm tired of being taxed to the hilt while the big corporations get a free ride and these phony non-for-profits keep ripping off the system. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the nation going to war as people are starving. I'm tired of people that worked all their lives losing their homes because they can't pay their taxes. I'm ready to get out of here. I was down in Uruguay and in Argentina, ready to leave. And when I came back on April 23rd, I realized you can't run away. There are two-bit freaks everywhere. Name the country. Hey, you got one over there in France, Hollande. Hey, how about Cameron? Or do you like Blair before him? Or do you like Sarkozy? Name the country you got your freak. This is my country. And no two-bit freak is going to run me out. If they want to, they could come and talk to me man to man. I'm staying. This is the country that my grandparents came to. This is my America. And I'm putting my money and my heart and my mind in what I believe could be the second American Revolution. That's why I bought the 1750 Franz Rogan House, the 1774 Academy, and the 1763 Dr. Jensen House, that are situated on the most historic corner in the United States of America, in colonial Kingston, New York, the first capital of New York State, the place that had its roots in the Revolution. It was burnt down by the British in 1777 and restored. And a key place, not only for the Revolution, but helping to build and rebuild America. If we had the first American Revolution with part of its roots there, we can have the second American Revolution. A revolution of the heart and the mind and the spirit and morality. Something that doesn't exist when you send drones to kill innocent people. When you allow banks to rob your savings and take your home and put you on the street. A morality that doesn't exist when they make up names like austerity measures to rob your money, raise your taxes, take your pensions and benefits away, and give them to the banksters. A morality that doesn't exist in a country that used to be the beacon of capitalism. Nothing wrong with capitalism. This ain't it. It's fascism. Too big to fail. Four words that killed America. Too big to fail? Could you imagine the founding fathers buying that one? And just think of Washington, what he said about not becoming involved in foreign entanglements. Read the quotes from Madison and Jefferson, warning us in even using the terms of the money changers, the bankers, and the central banks robbing us. Generation after generation. I want to go back to what the founding fathers believed in, what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was about. I want to go back to the country that my ancestors came to so they can make their way and make a place in America. I've had enough of the multinationals, and I've had enough of the mafia. That's right, the mafia. The Republican and Democratic mafia telling me how to think, what I should believe, taking my money, and if I was not courageous enough to stop them, to take my life. And that's why I'm taking you to the most historic four corners in the United States, Colonial Kingston, to begin the restoration of America and to start the Second American Revolution.
Okay, well, pretty interesting stuff there, I think. And I think that's a message that most people in the country can believe in, can back, whether or not they're Democratic, Republican, or right or left, or where they come from. You know, just going back to the basics. Everybody, I think, a consensus of people in this country would probably say that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were a pretty good starting point. You know, maybe they need to be updated. Maybe they need to be changed a little bit. But if at least we went back to that point, and we're not there now with all the stuff going on in the world, we're not anywhere close to those principles right now.
You think there's been some drift?
I believe so, especially in the last 20, 30 years.
You know,
I mean, definitely under the last couple of presidents.
Yeah, it seems like the institution of the presidency has become increasingly imperial. And it seems like the Senate and the House have become increasingly irrelevant.
Right. So a couple of things that he said. First off, prepare yourself. Be strong physically, spiritually, politically. Buy local wherever you can. Break the chains of the chain stores and the corporations. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The golden rule. And then reinstill morality into politics and society. So I think those are some good messages there and could be the basis for some real change in this country. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. I thought that was very interesting when I found that, and it came right at the same time I was thinking about Second American Revolution. That's, you know, has a catchy name. So hopefully something will catch on and maybe change will occur around that message.
All right, well, thanks for bringing that to us, Dave. It's nice to get in and share a little bit like that. It's also nice to go in and do a little piece like that and kind of let it ride for a little bit and see what people think.
Yeah, and so hopefully we can talk about that. Unfortunately, we're kind of jammed for time right now, but hopefully over the next couple of shows, you know, we can continue to build on this discussion as well.
Well, I want to turn now to something that happened at Pulahale about a month ago. There was kind of a dust-up and a little bit of a rumble. And there was a couple of letters to the editor that came in to Garden Island about it. So I'm going to read you these two letters here. First one's called Not Like Paradise. This letter is in regard to the incident that happened at Pulahale a couple weekends ago. How poho. Whether for territorial, retaliation, or plain troublemaking reasons, shame on you. We are also blessed to live in one of the most beautiful places in the world with one another. We are a territory together and should stand united, not divided. I'm talking about the island of Kauai. With the many issues that this island is challenged with, GMOs, drug addictions, affecting so many loved ones, improper care to the land, just to name a few, how can we begin to formulate solutions without caring for one another? Come on, boys. Stand together as one to defend what is real and what really matters, please. Much aloha, Allison Chun and from Hanalei. And then the second letter is called Alert Robbery at Pulahale. And this one's from Megan Wong in Kilauea. A group of North Shore boys were robbed at Pulahale. A mob of adult men from the west side attacked and beat them with chains and bats. There were threats that they had guns waiting in the parking lot. They stole a pop-up tent, sound systems, generators, coolers, and anything else they could get their hands on. They damaged vehicles as well as theft and beating, all the while shouting Westside United. This is not okay. We should not have to pack guns to protect ourselves while camping at Paula Holly or any other beach. This is a shame to our community and our island. We will get to the bottom of this. If you have any information regarding this activity, please come forward. Now, one of the things that was a little bit disturbing about that when it happened was, I guess it took over 5 hours for the police to come. So that wasn't so good. Now, hopefully we got Megan Wong's going to call in here and talk about that. There we go. There's the phone. Hopefully that's Megan. Aloha, you're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hi, this is Megan.
Aloha, Megan.
Hi.
So I just read your letter from the Garden Island from a couple of weeks ago, and I'm wondering if you can tell us what has happened in the meantime since those letters came out and were published.
Well, quite a few things have transpired. I've been really busy, and it's hard to follow up on other people to make sure they follow up and do their jobs. That's kind of been the frustrating part and where I'm at right now. I don't have the time to follow up on other people. But as we speak, I don't know if anything's really been done. There has been reports made, and I'm not really sure what's being done. There was an incident, which is disturbing to me, that happened similar to this about a year ago. And that incident may or may not have involved the same people, but same kind of story. Sounds like the same group of guys shouting the same things. In their 30s, and this was almost a year ago. The guy was beat so bad that he had his face broken in 5 places. He was hospitalized for 10 days, and he had his jaw wired shut for 2 months. He said the detective called him and told him that they had an arrest warrant for the guys involved, and he said they would be arresting him within the next couple weeks. He said that's been about 7 months ago, and he keeps calling to find out what's going on, and they don't take his calls anymore. The prosecutor calls him about once a month and lets him know that she has not been sent the report, so she's not able to prosecute or move forward on the case. So that's disturbing to me. I don't want to point fingers at someone's not doing their job, but there's so many stories that we don't hear about that get just lost. You know, and I find it really disturbing that the paper produces stories about every dog attack that happens out there. You know, another dog attack here, but not about an attack on human beings, on life. Like, the news makes such a fuss over dog attacks, but we have people being attacked. You know, Jonathan, I you know that I'm, like, super busy, but I'm headed down the hill to Kalihiwai. Can I leave you and call you right back? Because I'm going to lose you.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry to do that to you, but I got to keep moving. So I'll call you in 2 seconds. All right.
So that's Megan Wong. You wrote a letter into the editor and then has since been trying to follow up on what happened out at Paula Holly. And it seems like... seems like not everything is working the way it should, the way you'd hope it would. We don't have a smoothly oiled machine here to take care of problems when they arise.
Was anybody injured out there? And I heard bats and chains. I mean, is there any serious injuries or anything?
You know, maybe when Megan calls back, we can ask her that question. It was my understanding that it was more of a provocation of a situation. It's a very threatening situation. And that I don't think too many people got hurt too badly.
Yeah.
Maybe that's her calling back right now. Is that you, Megan?
No, but I have a comment on that.
Oh, all right. Well, go right ahead then. You're on the air and out of the box. Welcome to KKCR.
Sure. I don't think it's appropriate to be pointing fingers to anybody on the west side by hearsay stories. Because if you want to hear a hearsay story, they said that those Northsiders were having a rage party down there. 15 to 24-year-old people drinking, driving crazy on the stand. So there's all kinds of stories.
Which also doesn't sound very good.
Right. And that's how things started. But these guys are driving crazy on the stand. Okay, so there's all kinds of allegations. So Miss Wong is hearing a hearsay kind of thing. So are we. So there shouldn't be fingers pointed to anybody.
So how can we get to the bottom of a situation like this where clearly there were mistakes made on all sides? And how do we fix it? That's my question.
Well, first of all, we're stretching these stories longer than they really are. So before you get to the bottom of it, make sure you get the story straight.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Aloha, and welcome to Out of the Box. You're on KKCR.
Hi, it's Megan again. Yeah, I'd like to get the story straight, and that was my intent with putting it out there. I don't condone driving on the beach, drinking underage, drugging, or any of that. That happens on all of our beaches, not just Polihali. And my point of the matter is that we don't take law into our own hands and handle it ourselves with bats and chains and stuff. Two wrongs don't make a right. So not all of those people that had a party down there were driving up and down the beaches or being disrespectful. But one got beat or threatened and had things stolen from them. So again, two wrongs don't make a right. And how do we get to the bottom of this? This isn't about pointing fingers north versus west or south. This is a disgrace on our community, on our island. And as I hear it, it's more disturbing that this has been ongoing. And I did get a letter from the west side, and I know, I'm going to make a statement, that I know that this group of people on the west side don't represent the west side community. I have family that stretch from as far north to west to every island. And so I know that a small group of people like this may make a shame on the community, but they don't represent the west side. As a group from our North Shore does not represent the North Shore community as a whole either. You know, it's a small grouping of people, but we need to figure out how to get to the bottom of it. The letter that I got from someone from the west side, they were not directly involved, but he felt that he backed them up 100% and was definitely aware of what had been going on and what had happened. And he said basically that, if I had the letter on hand, I'd read it to you, but it basically said that if you're not from that Ahupua, from the west side Ahupua, you don't belong on Poleali Beach. Hawaiian or non-Hawaiian, their beaches are inundated with people, and they don't believe that anybody who's not from that area belongs on that beach. So they do regulate, and that they will continue to regulate. Alarming it is for me that they feel that way, and sad, because that's in the division of family as well.
Sure, and it seems like with our island as small as it is, we should be able to figure out how to get it together and responsibly enjoy all the different areas of the island in a way that
right.
we don't degrade them or disrespect them
Absolutely.
Or the people who live there, because, hey, this is a tiny island. We all got to live together.
And we feel the same way about our side of the island. You know, our beaches are inundated. Like, take a trip, try to get to Ke'e. If you don't get there by 6 a.m., you don't get a parking space. I don't know what locals can get to some of our beaches. I mean, really talk about inundated beaches, come to the North Shore and feel our frustration. But we cannot take law into our own hands by beating people because they don't belong there or they're not from the Ahupua. It's just not right, you know? And that's where I'm coming from, is what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And if people are disrespecting the Poleali Beach or that side of the island, it's not just North Shore people, and that we don't handle it with violence. And if the state needs to figure out a way to regulate it by closing down the beach until they figure that, then that's what needs to happen.
Well, then everybody loses. That's no
then
good
everybody
either.
Everybody loses. But, you know, I think there's plenty of ways to for them to figure it out. Instead of having enforcement patrol the beaches to make sure everyone has their permits between, you know, 5-9 at night or whatever the times that people see them out, is maybe they should have those enforcement come from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. That's when things happen. You don't really need to be checking people to see if they have their permits. Those are not the people you're trying to deter. You're trying to deter partiers, people driving up and down the beach between campers. I mean, there are ways around it. And I'm sure they'll come back and say there's not enough funding, but we have enough funding to send policemen on the bike trail to patrol people to make sure they pick up their dog poop. I think they can figure out a way to patrol Polihali Beach. If that's what we need to do, I mean, there's definitely a community of people and minds can come together and come to a conclusion that works for everyone.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, is that we can get the island to come together on this, because otherwise we're just going to have more problems. And I think that's something that nobody wants.
Right. I mean, that was my point. It was not to point fingers and say they did and that they were not right. But although they said there are stories out there that people were driving up and down the beaches and being disrespectful, there was theft and there was beating. And so whatever your excuse might be, it's wrong. And you don't regulate that way. And they came in with like 30 adults, and they did this to these group of people. Now, the one they said it happened a year ago, that was a party for a 40-year-old man. It was a small gathering, and it wasn't a bunch of underage kids drinking, and that wasn't the case back then. But maybe they were from the North Shore or whatever the reason might be, or they were not from that area, so they got regulated. I don't know, but I would like our community to come together and figure out how this is going to be solved.
Well, that's my sincere hope, and I don't want to point the finger at anybody, West Side, North Shore, whatever. I just want people to come together and figure out how we can all get along.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much for calling in, Megan Wong. Appreciate
Thanks.
That.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. Get another caller standing by here. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Can I make a comment?
Please do.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just calling to say I'm born and raised on the North Shore. I live on the South Side now. My family and I camp at Polihali with North Shore people and West Side people all the time, at least 4 times a year. We've never ran into any problems with anybody. There's only been Aloha out there on the West Side.
That's always been my experience whenever I go out there. I've never had any problems whatsoever.
Yes, and I think, and I've heard through the grapevine, like everybody else has, that these kids were having a huge party out there, and there's things wrong on both sides. I don't think it's right for somebody. The only comments that I've ever heard is from this Megan girl, who apparently wasn't even at the party.
I think it was her brother was there.
Yeah, but she wasn't there, and where are all the kids that were there calling in to say what really happened? Because right now, it's hearsay on her side, hearsay on everybody else's side. And it is actually creating a divide between the North and the West Side, and there never was one before.
So how do we get past that?
I don't know how to get past that, but all I want to say from my own experience is we camp out there all the time. My family was actually camping out there that weekend, and DLNR came. They were with people from the North Shore and the West Side all camping together. DLNR came checking permits because they heard that there was a party already out there Friday night. And from what I heard was these kids heard that DLNR was coming to break up the party, so they changed the party to Saturday. And so obviously they're doing their job, and they never had any problems. They were out there Saturday night camping. They never had any problems. They didn't get anything stolen. They were fine. So I think that this whole thing right here is what's causing a rift between the North and the West Side. I've been here my whole life. I've been to parties on the beach, and when there's people disrespecting, this is kind of what happens. It's been going on for a long time, but I don't think it's right on either side. But I also don't think it's right that she's making all these accusations, and she wasn't even there.
All right, well, I want to thank you for calling in and sharing your perspective.
Okay, thanks.
All right, aloha. We have another caller standing by.
Hello?
Aloha. You're welcome to Out of the Box on KKCR.
Yeah, I think the whole whole problem is all these timeshares and condos that they're putting up everywhere. All of a sudden you're inundated with all these strange people that just take over everything.
If you can make it real quick, I'm trying to get... So what do you think is the solution to that?
Well, let's cut back on all that stuff. I don't care if the county gets a bunch of funds from these projects. They're huge projects. We don't need them huge. Maybe 20 or 30 or something, but not 200 or 400 or whatever they put up. They put them all up. You can't even find some of the beaches anymore because they just keep building.
Well, it seems that if these are the problems that we're experiencing now, that the pressures are only going to increase because there's more construction keeps happening and tourism keeps going up and up. So how are we going to get past all that?
I think we have to put a limit on the need and greed. You know, there's people that are just greedy, and then there's people that are needy, and we got to kind of balance that.
All right, well, thanks for calling in with your perspective. Appreciate that.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Okay, we have one of our guests calling in right now. Bruce Gagnon is on the phone. Hold on.
Aloha, Bruce. Are you there?
Good. Yeah, hi.
Aloha. Yeah, we're just trying to take care of some local business here as well. Everyone's got problems in the world. We all got to try and figure out how to get along.
That's the key, isn't it?
It sure is. And you're coming to Kauai. You're on Kauai now. Welcome to the island.
Thank you.
And you're going to be speaking tomorrow night at Kapa'a Public Library. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be speaking about.
Well, I'm going to be talking about the Obama Asia pivot.
The pivot. Big pivot.
The military pivot into the Asia Pacific that is really drags Hawaii right into the middle of this whole thing. With the Pacific Command headquartered in Honolulu, and so many naval ships passing through this region, through this state, and then also here on Kauai, the PMRF is a key installation in developing these new so-called missile defense systems.
Yeah, now missile defense is kind of it's a funny name to give it because it's really about power projection. Maybe you can explain that little dipsy-do for listeners.
Well, you know, this is a real important personal issue for me because I come from Bath, Maine, and at Bath Iron Works in my community, they're building Navy Aegis destroyers. And these ships are being outfitted with these so-called missile defense interceptors that they then park just off the coast here of Kauai. And when they launch a dummy warhead from PMRF, these destroyers then fire these interceptors and knock it out.
Yeah, they defend it out of the sky is what they do.
That's right. And so really what they are is they're the shield that makes U.S. first strike weapons policy possible.
Now, I want to ask you if you could basically just say that again, because it's so important, and it's so easy to miss.
The shield, what Kauai is doing is creating for the Pentagon the shield that goes along with the U.S. first strike sword. And let me give you a real world example. Annually, the United States Space Command, headquartered in Colorado, has been wargaming a first strike attack. It's a computer war game. They set in the year 2016. It's a first strike attack on China. China today has about 20 nuclear missiles capable of hitting the west coast of the U.S. So in this war game, the U.S. tries to take out all of China's 20 nuclear missiles.
To shield them, yeah.
But we don't get all of them. And so then China tries to launch its remaining few in a retaliatory strike, as you would imagine they would do. And then that's when this shield comes into play. Its job is to take out the remaining Chinese nuclear weapons, giving the U.S. a quote-unquote successful first strike attack.
Now, a successful first strike attack, for folks who don't know, explain what the basic contours of that is. What does that mean?
Well, it's the beginning of a nuclear war.
Where we get to blow them up and they can't touch us.
That's right. And so that's what PMRF is practicing. And that is really important for people to know. I mean, it's crucial. And then when these ships have, quote-unquote, got this tactic down right, and they've practiced it and they can do it real good, then what's happening is the Pentagon is taking these Navy Aegis warships with these missile, so-called missile defense interceptors, and they're using them to surround Russia and China, which, guess what is happening as a result?
Russia and China feel kind of agitated about that. It makes them feel like we're wargaming first strike scenarios against them.
And they say, well, let's see, any more negotiations for nuclear reductions? Forget about it. We can't afford to do it. Why should we reduce our nuclear missiles at a time when you're creating this shield in order to do a first strike number on us? Forget it. We're not going to. In fact, we've got to build more. And off we go into the wild blue yonder of a new arms race.
Right.
That is costing us our education, our health care, our Social Security, our Medicare, Medicaid, and everything else.
Yeah, and the basic infrastructure of the nation.
That's right. And so it's totally insane. In fact, I just read yesterday that the U.S. is going to start paying Spain $20 million a year so that we can port these Aegis warships with these missile defense interceptors in Spain. We're going to pay them $200 million a year. Guess what? Guess where that money's going to come from?
I'm thinking out of the food stamp program or somewhere.
You are so smart. You are getting all of the answers right. I mean, it's crazy. It's totally crazy. And so what my job is to go to these various places where all these different dots are happening and help connect them and help people see how Bath Iron Works, where I live in Maine, is connected to PMRF here, is then connected to Jeju Island in South Korea, where they're going to deploy these, and a 500-year-old fishing village is being torn apart to build a Navy base, so that the U.S. can port these warships closer to China so they'll have more access to their nuclear weapons as the U.S. plans a first strike attack.
Well, maybe since you're going to be giving a speech about this, maybe you can tell listeners where and when that's going to be and how they can get to it so they can hear. Because we don't have time. I wish we had more time to go into much greater detail here and now. But where is your speech going to be?
Tomorrow night at the library at 6 p.m. Kapa'a Library.
Okay, and that's free to all who wish to come.
Free as a bird. Yeah, come on, and we'll have a great discussion. And I guess they're going to have some refreshments there.
Light poo-poos.
Like poo-poos. That's right. That's what you call them here. Poo-poos.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't call them that where I'm from.
What do you call them where you're from?
Refreshments.
Refreshments. Yeah. All right. Well, either way, it's the same thing.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on to the show, and thanks also for coming on. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at the Kapa'a Library at 6 p.m.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Oh, bye-bye.
Okay. We have a caller that was calling in previously about the Polahalli incident that hung on the phone, so let's go to there.
All right. Thanks for patiently holding, and welcome to Out of the Box.
You. I just wanted to say I've heard two people criticize Megan Wong for not having all of the facts or for pointing the finger, and I didn't get the impression she was pointing the finger at anybody, really. I got the impression that she was concerned about the situation.
I think she is pointing the finger of concern. I would agree with you on that, caller.
Yeah, you know, and there is room for concern, you know. Gosh, I was at Polahalli. It's been a long time. No, actually, it was at Pacific Missile Range facility. I was camping on the beach in Majors Bay, and we were having a surf contest the next day. And there was a bunch of guys, and I'm pretty sure they were from the west side, and they were playing football all night long, and they had generators, and they were playing music, and it was really loud. But they were having a really good time, you know. And even though I would have liked to have just slept quietly under the stars, you know, I didn't even go and ask them to turn it down. I mean, it wouldn't really probably do. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that, but. You know, I don't know what these kids from the North Shore were doing, and I don't think it's smart to drive crazily on any beach.
No, I think that's actually, I'll go on record as saying that's dumb.
Yeah. However, I don't think by getting chains and stealing their things and beating on their cars or whatever that was done, whatever damage was done. I don't think that's smart either. I mean, you know, that is taking being a vigilante and taking the law into your own hands. And, you know, it just causes, it's just not porno. You know, it's just not the right way to go about getting things done. And I do find that it's really sad that the police department don't take these kinds of things seriously. And I agree, because I own pit bulls, and it's a big deal to some people in my neighborhood that I own pit bulls. I feel like when it's a dog that attacks another dog or a human, which is horrible, absolutely horrible, more gets done than a situation like this. It's like it's almost like law enforcement doesn't want to know who did it and doesn't want to arrest anybody.
Well, thank you for calling. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate your perspective.
Okay, thanks.
All right, aloha. Aloha, welcome to Out of the Box.
Hi, Jonathan Jay. This is Gary Hooser.
Aloha, Gary Hooser. Thank you for calling in at 5 o'clock.
Oh, Gary. Hold on 1 minute. I got a little station business to take care of.
Yeah, we got to do the station ID, then we'll get right back to you.
Hold on.
I'm going to start with this one here. Okay.
You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa.
Okay, and it's 5 o'clock, and you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and this is Out of the Box Show. Got an hour left in the show, and this show is brought to you by listeners like you in partnership with the following wonderful underwriters.
People just like you.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural, biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina, Hawaii lifestyle.
Children exposed to pesticides during critical growing years face health issues such as higher incidences of respiratory problems, autism, brain cancer, and these are just the tip of the iceberg. We all suffer from the use of pesticides in our food, our air, water, and our aina. Let's live organic. It's intelligent and safe.
Okay. Gary, you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I just want to let people know they're listening to Out of the Box on KKCR with Dave Giroux and Jonathan Jay. And our guest who's calling in right now is Gary Hooser, one of our seven lovely council members. And I want to appreciate you for calling in. And what did you want to talk about today?
Well, I want to thank you for doing the show and for allowing me to call in. I wanted to talk briefly, if we could, about the bill, 2491.
I haven't heard of this bill yet. Maybe you could tell me about it a little bit.
Well, it's bill 2491, and the official title is Relating to Pesticides and Genetically Modified Organisms. And what this bill does, in a nutshell, is it requires the companies to disclose both the pesticides that they're spraying as well as the genetically modified organisms growing. It creates a buffer zone around schools and hospitals and sensitive areas for pesticides that are being sprayed by the same companies. It bans open-air testing of the experimental pesticides, experimental GMOs, and that's not saying they can't do it. It's saying that if they're going to do it, they have to do it inside.
Some under more controlled circumstances.
Yeah, because these things, I mean, by definition, experimental means it's not supposed to be released into the environment.
Right, it means an experiment because you don't know what the results are yet.
Exactly. And then the bill also creates a moratorium. It basically says you can keep doing what you're doing in terms of growing GMOs and whatnot, but you can't expand your operation until we do an environmental impact statement and set up a permitting regime. And that, in a nutshell, that's it. And, you know, I think both ends of the spectrum, Jonathan, aren't happy with it, you know, because this is not going to kick GMOs off the island.
Yeah, I've heard some people say that they're a little disappointed because it's not going far enough.
Yeah, and then the companies, don't like it one little bit, not one little piece of it. So they're fighting it tooth and nail.
Now, why are they fighting it? Because that's a little confusing to me, because it seems like the watchwords of the bill are responsibility, reasonableness, and a concern overall about safety. So who's against safety, reasonableness, and responsibility? Nobody can really be against those things. I'm confused.
Yeah, and I'm disappointed and a little bit taken aback at their opposition also, because it is basically just what you said. The only thing I can figure out is the industry doesn't want any additional regulation whatsoever, period. No, end of story. You know, they don't care what it is. They don't want anything. And if, maybe they're afraid that if we do this on Kauai, God forbid, they might do it on Maui or some other county, some other place.
And they would be compelled to have responsible use and safety paramount in all their actions?
And also, the bigger concern is, you know, why don't they want us to know what they're doing or what chemicals they're using? And it begs the question, you know, what is there to be afraid of? Maybe if all the information was public, the public would be even more concerned than they are now. And, you know, people talk about, you know, the industry will say, well, these pesticides have been studied, these GMOs have been researched. So no one has researched the impacts on our community, and that's really what this bill is about. What impacts are these chemicals, pesticides, and GMO activities, what impacts do they have here? It's not debating whether the science of genetic modification is good or bad.
That's a separate discussion.
Yes, exactly. You know, doing my research, I discovered that these companies are using 22 different restricted use pesticides. And these are the worst of the worst. These are atrazine, paraquat, and others that are banned in Europe. And
paraquat? Really?
Paraquat, yes.
Wow. That's terrible.
I thought terrible. They banned paraquat a long time ago.
Yeah, I thought that's amazing. I thought they only were spraying that in Mexico or something.
And this is 18 tons a year of 22 different restricted-use pesticides.
Here on Kauai?
Here on Kauai.
Wow.
And this doesn't count how many tens of tons of what they call general-use pesticides, the Roundups of the world. 18 tons is the restricted use, you know, they're probably using 80 tons or more of the other stuff on top of it.
So like 100 tons all told.
Yeah, and nobody knows what impacts that has on our community, in our streams and rivers and coastline, and the health of our citizens. And that's what this bill is all about, you know, disclosing what's being used and then studying the impacts. And, you know, quite frankly, if the impacts are studied, maybe they're not as bad as we think, or maybe they're worse.
Or maybe with appropriate setbacks, many of the activities can continue.
Right. And that's another surprising thing, is why they're fighting for the right to spray atrazine and paraquat next to schools and hospitals and homes.
Yeah, I think that kind of puts them on the wrong side of the argument, though.
Yeah.
Gary, this is Dave Giroux. You mentioned that there's a lot of pressure being put on by the seed companies there. How do you see that? What sort of things? I mean, you're getting phone calls from them? You're getting letters? What do you mean that they're putting pressure on people?
Well, you know, I've worked with these people for a long time, and so we have a mutual understanding. They know where I stand on the issue, and so they don't really put pressure on me directly.
Because they're not going to change your mind.
Right. And, you know, I think it's getting their employees to believe that this is going to shut them down, which is not the case. They've invested tens of millions of dollars. They have long leases. Yes, it will cost them more money. Yes, they will operate safer, but it will not shut them down. I believe there's, you know, rumors are being spread that this is going to impact small farmers. This does not impact small farmers at all.
Because they're not using any of the 22 restricted use pesticides.
Exactly. You know, I got the records from the Department of Ag, and in the past 3 years, only two farmers, real farmers, that grow food, you know, to eat and stuff, that have used tiny amounts of these things in the past 3 years. This measure is just structured for the large users. Some people will say golf courses. Well, you know, golf courses use a lot. G- golf courses, all the golf courses on Kauai combined use 50 pounds a year.
Total.
50 pounds of
restricted use.
Okay.
Compared to 18 tons.
Okay. For probably more of other non-restricted use chemicals.
Yeah. And I'm not saying the other stuff is good. It's just, you know, going after the very largest users to make them at least tell us what they're using, how much they're using, and discover, you know, do some research on what those impacts are.
Well, that's accountability, right?
Exactly. And, you know, it's the state constitution says that the state and all its political subdivisions, that's us, okay, we're a political subdivision, the Constitution says we shall conserve and protect our natural resources, our air, our soil, and our water. It doesn't say if you want to, you can do it. It says you shall.
That means, now I'm not a lawyer, so maybe you can help people understand what shall means.
Well, they didn't they go through that last year, a couple of years ago?
Well, the county, when I wasn't there, did have this discussion, but at the state level, the general legal knowledge, shall means you gotta do it.
You gotta.
It means you gotta do it.
Okay.
You're responsible for doing it. And I believe,
it's your culiana.
Yeah, you know, I believe that's my job as a council member.
You shall do it. Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear about that.
Yeah.
Gary, I thought it was really interesting and very strong, the preamble to this bill, the findings section, where you go through, you know, that it is your responsibility and it's certainly within our rights to do this. You know, it's not something that we have to let the federal government do or the state government, that the county government has the authority to undertake this kind of measure.
Yes, and the industry is going to argue that point. But I've had 8 different attorneys from the mainland, from Honolulu, from here on Kauai look at it. I've read the law extensively, and there's nothing, no law that says we cannot do this, and there's several laws that say we can and we shall. You know, this last legislative session, the GMO industry tried to pass a law taking that right away from us.
Yeah, they tried to sneak that one by.
Yeah, and it was, they actually were trying to delete the words health and life. The county has the right now the authority to protect health and life. And the industry had proposed a bill taking those two words out, which I found totally outrageous.
Yeah, that is pretty outrageous. As a living person, I take offense at that.
But, you know, the hearing is on the 31st of July. It's going to be at Kauai Community College at the Performing Arts Center. That's a public hearing. There will be no vote taken on that day.
Yeah, maybe you can explain to us the process, how that works.
Yeah. So the next step in the process is a public hearing. So that'll happen on the 31st, 1:30. I encourage people to come down and, equally as important, submit testimony online, council testimony at kauai.gov, I believe.
Is that equally you carry the same weight as being there in person?
Well, I would hope people would do both. You know, the physical reality of everybody speaking is going to be challenging.
Right.
There's so we're going to have a long meeting, and people will get tired and go home. But everyone who stands in line or signs up will get 3 minutes. So after the public hearing is done.
Yeah, what happens next, if you could walk us through that? Because this is kind of like a civic lesson for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. No, this whole thing is really a giant exercise in community democracy. It's really very exciting. So approximately 1 week after the public hearing, there is a committee meeting of the council. And the committee is a committee that I chair. It's a committee on economic development, agriculture, and sustainability. So at that committee meeting, which is, again, about a week later, there will also be opportunity for the public to testify if they want.
So more testimony, okay.
Yeah, but that's really the time when the council members start digging into it and asking questions. At the public hearing, we're primarily just listening. But at the committee meeting, we'll start asking questions to the attorneys or to the scientists or to the different stakeholders, if you would, trying to sort through the different issues. That'll happen at the committee meeting. And then we could possibly vote as a committee on that meeting, but more than likely we'll have a second committee meeting, which would be approximately 2 weeks later. Members by that time of the committee should have know where they stand on the issue if they don't already. And if members have concerns about various components, it's a comprehensive bill, so there may be certain paragraphs or clauses that they have some concerns about. They can offer amendments if they want to at that time. Then the committee will vote, and hopefully a majority of the committee, there's five people on the committee, will pass it out. Even if they don't pass it out of the committee, it still goes to the full council.
So then it goes back to the full council, and then what happens next?
At the full council, there's more discussion. The way it's supposed to work is most of the amendments and the heavy lifting of the discussion is supposed to happen in the committee. And so the council itself is supposed to just reaffirm the committee's decision. But the council, they can make further amendments. It takes four votes to pass and five votes to override a veto if the mayor decided for some reason that he was not supporting it. Right now, the mayor has been quiet on the issue, and I'm hoping that at the end of the day, he will support it also. Tim Bynum, I have to give credit to Tim Bynum, who is a co-introducer. Because of the Sunshine Law, we're not allowed to talk amongst each other too much in the council. It's really kind of bizarre.
Yeah, the Sunshine Law, its intention is to make sure that no backroom deals get cut.
Right.
But then at the same time, sometimes it makes it hard to actually conduct the business of the council.
Right. So the law allows Tim Bynum and I to talk at length about the bill and work together on it. But it doesn't allow me to have the same conversations with the rest of the council, except in a public forum.
I mean, you can't lobby them for support, or you can't discuss even the technical details at all?
Essentially, I can't discuss much at all. I certainly can't lobby them. It's supposed to be done in a public forum. And so what's happening now, which would happen even if we didn't have a Sunshine Law, the community on both sides of the issue, whether it's the industry or whether it's people who share support of the measure, the community now is sending emails and meeting with legislators. And so we're looking to, I believe firmly, of course, that this is the right thing to do and that we should pass it. And so I encourage people who share that to call council members, and send them emails. Don't wait for the testimony necessarily, but it's a small island. If you have a relationship with one of the council members, call them up or send them an email and say, hey, this is important to me. I hope you support it. And then hopefully at the end of the day, we'll get our four votes.
Well, what are the main challenges you see with this legislation as it stands now?
Well, there's two challenges. One is a political challenge, right, getting the votes.
Sure.
And the other is the law itself. And I think the industry is going to, and has already done this, they're going to say that this is not the county responsibility. We should leave this to the state or the federal government. They're going to say that they're going to sue us. They've already said that. They're going to say it's a poorly written bill. They're going to try to spread doubt and confusion. It's typical of any, if you want to kill a bill, that's how you do it. You raise questions, you try to get people to doubt the bill, so people will say, well, maybe it's not ready. I've spent 6 months working on this. We've had, again, attorneys from all over looking at it. We've had scientists, people with PhDs looking at it. And I'm convinced that we've vetted it. I'm at the airport, and I apologize for the noise.
Oh, that's quite all right. Now, I appreciate you calling in and being able to share your mana'o with our listeners.
Yeah. But see, that's the typical strategy of any opposition for any bill is to create doubt in the decision makers.
Gary, then how much time do you have? Then
I have till 5:30.
Till 5:30. Okay. Well, let's see. There's a couple of misrepresentations that we've heard. I wanted you to comment on, if you can. Then we had a caller on our last show that said, oh, what's wrong with GMOs? I got a GMO dog. You know, I got two different breeds of dog. You know, it's a GMO dog. You know, hell, I'm a GMO. You know, my mom's Japanese and my dad's Filipino. I'm a GMO kid, you know. What do you say to people when they say that?
Well, you know, I think that's misinformation being spread again by the industry.
Do you think that's coming from the industry? Do you think they're told to say something like that?
Well, I think that's a simplistic way that people that want to make it simplistic will use those as examples. This is just like, you know, modern, you know, old-fashioned crossbreeding, but it's not. The bill is very specific in its definitions. You know, genetic modification by definition is artificial and is not something that happens in nature.
Right, yeah. I tell them if you breed two different kinds of dogs, that's just hybridizing your dogs. But if you breed your dog with your cat or your dog with your tomato, then that's GMO.
Exactly.
Okay, and another thing is that the jobs, we're going to kill the jobs on the West Side, and this is, you know, like a big employer for jobs over there, and we don't care about them. Is that true?
That's absolutely not true. Frankly, the law would not allow us, the United States Constitution and the state constitution would not allow us to do that. That would be considered a taking under the law, and we would be liable for tens of millions of dollars in penalties, and they would sue us, you know. We just can't do that.
Right.
Legally, we cannot take away what we've already allowed them to do.
Right. Okay.
This bill merely says they can't expand for temporarily while we do an EIS.
Does that moratorium hold now? I mean, are they going to go out and just, you know, grab a whole bunch more fields and plant a whole bunch of stuff before this goes into effect?
Well, the bill was written with the effective date being the date of public notification, which was about a month ago.
Okay. So the stopwatch has already been punched.
Yeah. If they go ahead and try to ignore the intent of the council and the council passes this, that would cloud. That would be a legal issue. But it's written as upon public notification with the exact purpose of not having them jump ahead and go lease a whole bunch of land if they think a moratorium is coming.
Right. Okay, there also have been some misrepresentations, I think, on the anti-GMO side as well. You know, one is that they want to shut down the GMOs. And there's nothing in this bill that I see that indicates that. Now, it may end up that the EIS indicates an unsafe level of risk to the people in the environment, and maybe it would have to be controlled, and they may move off island themselves as a result of that, but there's nothing in here that says they have to leave if this is passed.
Exactly. There's nothing there. Again, part of the reason they are here is not just because of the sun and the cheap land, but it's because we have a lax regulatory environment.
And then this bill aims specifically to address that. Yeah, tighten that up.
Yes. And so ultimately, they may end up moving to a third world country, but it's not going to happen overnight. They've invested tens of millions of dollars in infrastructure, leases.
And another thing the anti-GMO folks are saying is that we want organic farms over there. We don't want these GMO folks. We want organic farms over there. And that's not part of this bill at all. And then so they're kind of clouding the issue and throwing in their own issues, but that's not in here at all. There's nothing in here. We're going to shut them down. We're going to put in organic farms.
No. I mean, there are private property rights involved, and so we cannot make the property owners, you know, lease to organic farmers or about 6,000 acres. There's a total of 15,000 acres being used approximately for GMO operations.
On Kauai?
On Kauai, yeah.
15,000 acres?
15,000. That's not all under cultivation, but that's under the control of the companies. Okay, about 6,000 acres is state land leased by the Agricultural Development Corporation to these companies. And so the state land, yes, the state you know, have some control over how that's used and could redirect it if they wanted to, and I wish they would, toward small farms, both conventional and organic.
But there's nothing in this bill about that at this time.
Not at all, not at all. You know, one thing I would like to say before I leave, it's important that the people who support the bill, you know, operate in a way that's respectful and inclusive of the entire community. I'm a little concerned of an increasing tone of stridentness, if you would. And, you know, I think we have the community on our side. I think we have the law on our side and you know, justice on our side. But we want to proceed forward, you know, as a community in a fashion that we're all proud of.
Well, how would you like people to get involved? What would you like to see people do right now in terms of if they're supporting the bill?
Well, number one, if you have a relationship with a council member or the mayor, yeah, well, say if you know them by name, if you met them, call them up, share your mana'o with them, ask for their help and support. That's number one. And then otherwise, just submit testimony via email and do thoughtful testimony. Not, you guys better do this or I'm not going to vote for you ever again, that kind of stuff. You know, stay away from the threats and just try to reason with people. And then show up on the 31st.
So the 31st at KCC, yeah, at 1:30, yeah, in the afternoon.
And, you know, everybody's equal, but some individuals' testimony are more important, quite frankly. I mean, if you're a physician, a nurse or a doctor, or you're a teacher, or you're a mother, or you're a leader in the community on some level, you know, I really encourage those people to contact their networks and reach out and support this bill, because that's really what it's going to take. It's going to take a growing support from a broader and broader base in our community. So, listen, I gotta get on the plane.
All right, well, thank you, Councilmember Hoosier. I want to appreciate you very much for calling in and sharing your perspective about the bill and wish you a safe flight.
Thank you, and I'll hope to see you on the 31st.
All right, and we'll look forward to that.
Okay, thank you, Dave, too. Bye-bye.
All right, aloha.
Well, the phone lines are open here at 826-7771. If you want to talk about what we've just been talking about, the GMO chemical safety bill, or any of the other things that we've been talking about on the show today, the phone lines are wide open. It's 826-7771, or if you're calling from far, far away, 866-275-1112.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was hoping we'd get some chance for people to call, talk directly to Gary, but he was constrained in his time. But we do have phone lines open right now. So, caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. Great show, as always. I had a few comments. Number one, I think Thomas Jefferson said we should perhaps have a revolution every 20 years.
He did say that.
And I think that if we look to the founding fathers...
We're overdue, I think. It's been 220-something years, so we're like 11 revolutions overdue right now.
I think when the economy hits the fan, which it soon will, because I don't think most people, I mean, we're all struggling in our individual lives, trying to keep our heads afloat, unless we're, like, extremely wealthy. I think the sad thing is that that most people don't realize, even though they're not getting much money on their savings account, they have anything to save, and if they want to borrow some money, of course, if you're a student, it's like 6% or 7%. But if you're too big to fail, as I followed in following that gentleman, Mr. Salente, for many years, and I recommend a website that people should visit if they want alternative views than our lovely mainstream media. They should go to Rents, R-E-N-S-E, Rents.com, and it will link to, Trends and Mr. Salente. And I love the way Mr. Salente characterizes, you know, Obama and Bush.
The mafia.
Yeah, in other words, all the people who don't really represent us, they represent the big mega corporations, all those who are too big to fail, in other words, not us. You know, they should just see that, you know, he characterizes the fascist mafia, politico of any country, not just America, as the white shoe boys, you know? It's like, just think of the people, and I hope you guys weren't like presidents of your student body, but I think of all the people who, like in my high school, they were the knights and the ladies. They were the people who were like, their poop did not stink, excuse my French, dude, to cut to the chase. In other words, they were not the hoi polloi. They were not the average individual. They were somehow above the rest of us. And I think it's sad that most Americans don't understand that, you know, the way the financial game is played, that just because you can't earn any interest on your money and they can loan money to the big cheeseburgers or falafel burgers or whatever they are for like practically no money, and yet, you know, the whole thing is a house of cards, and pretty soon it's going to all fall down. Just like a shark. A shark has to move, otherwise it dies. The American economy, just like in the Orient, for example, the American economy versus the Orientals, like the Japanese, the people in like Singapore, Japan, China, they save up half of their income. Half of their income. So, I mean, they were talking, I watch all these different news sources. I like to see how they spin these things, all different countries, BBC, NHK, PBS, then the mainstream ABC, BBS, CBS Liars. Excuse my French. But anyway.
Yeah, I haven't heard any French at all. You said hoi polloi. I didn't even think that's French.
Well, yeah. Oh, speaking of, talking about, you know, this, the quote, you know, I mean, I've been here 30 years, and I love the beauty of Kauai, but this whole thing about local, I just don't understand it at all. I mean, to me, it has a very negative, and for all the people who didn't hear me what I was saying, negative connotation. It's fine to be proud of your people, how many generations go back, your family, but this whole thing is just it's negative. The point is, that's what we try to get away from in America, even though this is not technically America. In Belgium, for example, they even fought each other over the pronunciation of French. Talk about insane.
Sure, la Belgique.
And yeah, exactly. It's, yeah.
Okay, well, we got another call there. You got any closing remarks?
My closing remark is I want to refer back, gentlemen of the Spooky Entanglement Brothers, to the fact that came here, and you know, the French dude who wrote about democracy, what's his name? Brain damage, I can't remember. Anyway, he said the thing he thought was neat about America was the fact that Americans had this civic spirit. They wanted to put aside differences and work together. I just hope that we can all work together.
All right. Well, thank you, caller. Appreciate that.
The police department brought us.
Thank you, caller. We get another caller standing by. Aloha, welcome to Out of the Box. You're on KKCR.
Hi, I'm calling from the West Side.
And oh, good.
We do spend a lot of time at Poly Holly and have never seen any problems. What do you
think that the Pilikia is all about?
Well, first of all, I think that whoever reports should have a first-hand account, not what they heard or what their brother said. I think it should be, you know, I was there and, you know, everybody has a cell phone. They can take pictures and say, this is what I saw. Here it is. That way we know we're dealing with facts, not just
hearsay.
Yeah, and threats. And
okay, so that makes good sense of facts.
And I think that if negative reporting is not backed up, that it gives PMRF more power to chase people off the beach when people want to be on the beach.
Yeah, that's a concern to me, because I like
me
to go
too.
Down there and have a good time. I've never gotten into any fights or any trouble with anybody. I just like to go there and have a good time.
Same here, and that's what I've ever seen there.
Peaceful and respectful, and appreciate the place for its qualities, and I always pack out everything I pack in, you know.
Yeah, I pick up garbage on the beach and put it in a bag and take it with me, if there is any, you know, and sometimes just stuff that floats in. And, yeah, I think that if we all not go by what we heard or what we read in the paper, but by you know, truthful accounts, and then go from there and say, let's change it. Let's make it a better place. Let's make sure that we all bring the aloha that this island has with us and share and, you know, keep it the way we've always known Poly Holly to be, which is one of the most beautiful beaches ever.
It sure is.
So that's all I wanted to say is, like, you know, let's not dwell on the negative, and if anybody has accounts, let's make sure that they're they're the real thing? Because I've talked to local kids in the last week that say that it's all a lot of it is exaggerated, and I don't know. Like, I don't want to quote them any more than that because I, you know, everybody says, well, my brother said and my uncle said, and, well, it's better if people have proof. You know, did the hospital call anybody and say, well, we had three injured people come in Saturday night because they were beat up and blah, 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 and, you know, there's no, you got to have proof. You can't just hearsay.
All right, well, thank you, caller. Appreciate that.
Okay, so thanks for your show.
And I also want to thank you for putting out those lovely wind chimes there.
Oh, it's
they're not only
here in Kekaha. It's really windy today.
Not only is it in your immediate environment, but we're also broadcasting it all over the entire island.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So
entire world.
Very nice.
Okay, have a great evening.
All right, thank you. Aloha. Another caller standing by. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Is that me?
It is you, sir.
All right. Hey, at the risk of sounding sarcastic, I would just like to say, where are these Westside United guys when real regulation needs to take place, you know?
What do you mean by real regulation?
What I mean by that is what Gary Hoosier was speaking about, which is all going down on the West Side. Talk about a situation that needs to be regulated, that needs warriors to stand up for a cause. I mean, I don't condone any misbehavior going to other sides of the island and totally disrespecting that side of the island. Shame on those guys, you know. But it's like here's a situation where Westside United, I'm talking Eastside United, Southside United, Northside United. It's like warriors, wake up, because here's a situation where talk about disrespect to the INA, talk about disrespect to them personally and their families and their children. They're being poisoned by these multinational companies coming in, dumping how many tons of
18 and a half tons of restricted use pesticides,
exactly.
And approximately 80 tons of run-of-the-mill fun-time pesticides.
Exactly. So this is a call to the Westside United, Southside United, Eastside United, Northside United. It's like, hook up with a warrior like Barca, who's fighting, you know, talk about a warrior fighting for a cause. There's proof right there. You know, all you guys, wake up. You know, if you want to regulate, if you want to stand up for what is Pono, here is your opportunity for a fight, you guys. And really, that's all I have to say.
All right, well, thank you for calling in, caller. I appreciate that.
Right on, you guys. Good job.
All right.
Bye.
Aloha. I want to let people know that on Saturday, July 13th, at 2 p.m. over Waimea Canyon Middle School cafeteria, there's going to be the attorneys are going to be there for the lawsuit that's happening. And they have a list of chemical lists, which details the chemicals that Pioneer has been using and the health risks associated with those chemicals. Couple questions they had is what poisonous chemicals are being sprayed daily? What are the risks, health risks associated with those poisons? Also, they have evidence that residue of a banned spray, not a restricted, but a banned spray, was found at the middle school. So what's going to be done about that? And then just a general review of the GMO Chemical Safety Bill, Bill 2491. So if folks out in Westside want an opportunity to learn more about what's going on, you can go to the Waimea Canyon Middle School at 2 p.m. at the cafeteria on July 13th. That's a Saturday. So heads up on that.
Okay, well, we got about 20 minutes left in the show, and we've got no guests here, so the rest of the show is dedicated to the callers. So phone lines are open, 826-7771.
And we'll just have moments of quiet respectfulness.
Mm-hmm. Any jokes there, John?
No need for jokes. We'll just let the callers call in.
You think they're going to call?
I guarantee.
Hey, what was that? The chemical that they used over there? They used to spray on marijuana fields and
paraquat.
Paraquat. I was going to look that up here. Is that really legal still?
I can't imagine it is. I thought that was a completely illegal, like DDT kind of a illegal.
Says it's one of the most widely used herbicides in the world.
Yeah, but don't spray it on anything that you want to eat or ingest.
Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
Turn your radio down a little bit, maybe.
Hey, coming back to Governor Hoosier.
Let's see. Was a former state senator, is now county council member.
In my eyes, he should be governor.
Okay.
I hope one day we can say that. He's talking right. And what he's, I think what he's talking about is on both sides of the GMO issue, you're going to have people out of line and too many demands. And the whole thing is they use a thing called dissension, like this harassment at Polahalli. You know, the guys over there on the west side are just, you know, and they're touchy and they're nervous. And who knows, but somebody amongst them might be for all for GMO. So let's call you this and raise this hell, you know. And it's called dissension.
Defension? How do you spell that?
Dissension.
Oh, you dissension, know, like to dissent.
Yeah, but I should look it up one day. I know I looked it up. It's dissension used as a lot of times in espionage, you'll have guys run around and cause trouble, right?
Oh, causing dissension in the ranks.
In the ranks and dissension amongst the people. And that's where, you know, all the corporations, their history has been done that to acquire all the lands that they have through the irrigations of California all the way across the country, you know. It caused trouble locally and went in and had paid the right people locally to be loud enough with the worst opinions and destroy the project, you know, because of outrageous. All we got to do is get united, period, on the issue. And that means, you know, especially everybody, including the police, which I'm sure they're all, most of them are family people. They have children. They know the issues, you know. And I'm sure they're with us. It's just that we have to stand and be united about the whole issue. Hey, it's a good program. Aloha.
All right. Thank you very much, caller. Appreciate that. And we have another caller standing by. Aloha, and welcome to Out of the Box. You're listening with Dave Giroux and Jonathan Jay and KKCR.
Well, aloha, beautiful beings. I am just calling when people, the import, which is an obvious, but many people think, well, if somebody else goes, they don't need to, that everybody show up on the 31st at 1:30, but early, so that we can occupy also seats, and so that there are plenty for everybody to sit and get there early. And, you know, just, you know.
So you say show up at noon, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay?
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, get there so that any of us that were at the courthouse, whenever it was, a month ago, whenever, I lost track, you know, there will always be other things going on. And how do we look at it? I want to be careful how I say it, but people may just show up and be paid to show up. I'll say that lovingly. So it's really important that if you care, that you're there and you occupy a seat and you can sit inside and be there so that we can really fill the place, okay?
All right. Well, thank you.
It's simple, but it's profound, important.
So right. You're Aloha. Making a call for warm bodies, yeah?
I am making a call for warm bodies. Don't think for a minute, sir, you think, oh, boy, and somebody else will show up. I don't need to. Show up.
All right, well, thank you, caller. I appreciate that.
All right, thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. We have another caller standing by. Welcome to Out of the Box. You're live on KKCR.
Yeah, when you show up early, remember what Gary Hoosier said, you should be a teacher or a fireman or a mother with a child or somebody other than just some regular old person.
Well, I think he wasn't saying that regular old folks shouldn't come as well. I think he was just saying that.
I know he was saying it's important for certain individuals to speak to the council, and I agree with him on that. Because, you know, I mean, this is basically the last shot, I guess, before the council votes. I don't know if they're going to have another meeting.
There'll be a committee meeting a week after that.
I just want to make sure all this regular, like, unimportant people, our voice is still important.
Well, I'd say your voice is pretty important.
Employed or not employed, whether we have, you know, as you put it, you know, because that's the, you know, I know he didn't mean anything bad by saying that. You know, I know where he's coming from and I agree with him, but every person counts.
All right. Well, I think that's something that everyone can agree with.
Right on. And one last thing, you know, like even though he said, you know, we've got to be very polite, you know, and act responsibly, I agree with that. Even though when I went to the meeting they had last month in Lahui, you know, I didn't feel any violent vibes from...
I didn't either. I was there. I thought everyone was pretty respectful to one another.
Well, yeah, you know, except, you know, if there is violence, I doubt it's going to come. It'll come from the GMO workers' side. That's kind of how I perceive, you know, if anything like real, you know, because they're afraid of losing their jobs. And that's why I know Gary's really sensitive about, you know, we've got, you know, if the GMOs ever do leave Hawaii, we've got to make sure to put an extra effort to help those people find new jobs. You know, I mean, but at any rate, I don't think the GMOs really care about Hawaiian workers. I mean, I think they'd probably just rather import their own workers, but they can use local workers for props and gain some sympathy, you know, and it creates infighting. And I honestly, in my heart, don't believe GMOs care about Hawaii or Hawaiian workers at all. At any rate, I hope it all works out. You know, I hope the day eventually comes where it is an organic farming over there and everybody can have jobs and everybody can happy and see the light about all this terrible poison that they're pumping in. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, caller. We got another caller standing right by. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Aloha. Enjoyed the show. Great subject matter. It's bouncing around, but it keeps coming back to that Polly Holly thing. And I looked up UrbanDictionary.com for rage, and it's to party extremely hard, excessive drinking, taking of pills, boozing, or any combination of the three.
Huh. So sounds like...
You're doing something like this on a public beach.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like... That's not what I go to the beach for.
You know you're going to be obnoxious in a public place, so right off the bat, you're blowing it with the public because there's other people around you.
Yeah, it's not very respectful to act like that. If you want to go do that somewhere in your own private affair, that's one business.
I don't think it's even respectful to take a generator and a music machine to a beach where you can't even hear the waves.
Yeah,
it's
ridiculous. I would agree with you on that.
Find a cave. Away from the public, you know, on a public beach. It's just ridiculous. And I found, you know, you might as well hear third-hand information from, you know, that woman who wrote her bunch of lies in the paper. There was no rumble on the beach. There was only one person who was holding the party, and he has a police record. That's the truth. And he confronted a Hawaiian from the west side, and the Hawaiian decked him with one punch, and he never got back up. And that was the end of the story. And so they were confronted only because they were trashing, literally trashing the whole area. Totally disrespect, and so that's the whole idea of their party is totally disrespect for everybody and everything around them. It's, you know, just look up the word rage party. I did it on DuckDuckGo, and you come up with this answer, and that's the answer to this whole thing. They went there with the intention of being obnoxious in public. That's the end of the story. And so I think this girl that wrote the letter in the paper, she must have been the girlfriend of the guy who got knocked down with one punch who was holding the party. And I'm happy for the Hawaiian that shut it down with one punch. And that's the end of the story. Otherwise, there'd be so many people in the emergency room with chain wounds and bat wounds. It'd be ridiculous, you know?
Okay, so violence does work.
No, it's not. There's no violence at all.
Well, a punch and a knocking somebody unconscious, that's violence.
Well, the punch was thrown by the guy who was holding the party, not by the Hawaiian.
Oh, okay. All right. The first punch.
The Hawaiian, when defending himself, threw a punch back, and that was the end of the story. He decked the guy, cold-cocked him, and he's out.
And I hate to ask you this, caller, because it might not be reflect well on you, but were you there and did you see this? How do you know?
No,
how do you know this?
I said this is third-hand information. It's just as good as that girl's second-hand information, and she has to broadcast it in the paper as second-hand information.
All right, so we might as well go to third-hand if we're
exactly
as long as we're counting
exactly
hands.
That's how ridiculous this dialogue is. You know, with her article in the paper. It's so redundant that she's even participating.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in with your view, caller.
Have a great time. It's a great show tonight.
Thank you.
Awesome.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Out of the Box.
All right. I got some third-hand information.
All right. We don't know fourth hand. We can get the fourth hand. Do I hear fifth?
Yeah. Here you go. Fifth. Listen, I'm putting this out because I don't really have the skills to search deeper, and maybe somebody out there.
Okay, that's good. So a request.
Yes, and who knows? Maybe somebody actually has the answer, and they can call in and inform us. But I read or I was told that Ben Cayetano, our former governor,
isn't he now the mayor of?
No.
No?
He ran for mayor. He
didn't. He was defeated.
He apparently was the one who courted the chemical companies to come to Hawaii, and especially to Kauai, and set up shop to provide jobs. And as a sweetener, they were offered $1 or $2 million per year incentive, and supposedly these three or four chemical companies are still receiving this $1 or $2 million per year.
It's a little bit of a sweetheart deal,
and to bring them here, to keep them here, and so theoretically there's $6 to $8 million per year that is being paid to these companies, who if you read their balance sheet, are among the largest corporations in the world.
Sure, they certainly don't need it on a hardship basis.
Yeah, and the point, my thought being that, my God, you could take these companies and send them back, and you could take that $6 or $8 million, you could pay the workers directly. They wouldn't even need a job.
So this is the county that's paying them?
No, the state.
Okay.
The state.
So how do we get to the bottom of that? Who can help research this?
That's what I'm hoping. That's why I'm throwing this out, because I don't know if it's true, but I seem to remember that it was a credible source. So I'm throwing it out there.
Okay.
To see if there's anybody in the community who knows one way or the other. If these companies were paid money to settle here, if they are still continuing to receive money,
and this would be state monies, yeah,
state money, and how much money?
Okay, well, that's a great question. That's a great way to use the community radio to help get your question out there, so maybe someone can help you find the answer.
I hope it's a negative, but I don't have too much hope.
Well, let the chips fall where they may, yeah?
Indeed.
Well, I know there are some other incentives that they're offered. Is land really cheap.
Yeah.
They don't pay any GE tax on any of the products that they produce here. And, you know, they're given tax credits and tax refunds or
deferrals.
Whatever. They don't have to pay taxes on their operations out there. So I don't know if we're really getting much benefit out of them at all.
One of the council, either I think it was Hoosier, it could have been Hoosier, it could have been Bynum. I forget which one. I was sitting there in the room when they mentioned it at the hearing the other week. Said that one of these companies hasn't paid their land taxes for years. They owe hundreds of thousands of dollars in back taxes. So
where's the pro bono publico?
Yeah.
Where's the benefit to having them there?
It's a mess anyway. I hope somebody can answer the questions that I posed.
All right, well, thank you for calling in with those questions. Those are good ones. And thank you for waiting patiently. You're now live on Out of the Box.
Hi, I was inspired to call because
I have another, I don't know how many hand story this is, but the source was Nancy Redfeather.
Okay.
And it was about the beginning. It was when the lovely gentleman that was just on, and I love his questions, but he said that Ben Cayetano was courting them.
Mm-hmm.
The story that I heard through Nancy Redfeather was that it was in 88 or 87, and it was in Washington, D.C., and the companies were looking for places to plant. And so Cayetano said, well, we actually have all these empty plantations. And they were like, oh, that's perfect.
Hmm.
So.
So that maybe you're helping to begin put some color on the question.
Well, no, I'm just adding, you know, the whatever hand information that was.
Well, some extra background information.
Yeah. So I don't know that if he courted him. But, I mean, it's entirely possible. And then as I'm talking about it, I'm kind of like, and why was Cayetano in Washington? You know, so it all bears looking into. At the time when this did happen, the one thing that somebody from GMO Free Oahu found, it was later, it was, you know, more recently, but she went through the archives down there and found in 1988 from the Department of Health, the State Department of Health, had a memorandum that was saying that none of these experimental things should be in the ground, that there needed to be further study to release them into the environment. And they were obviously not listened to. I personally would love to have somebody be able to follow up and talk to the people that had made this memorandum that were with the Department of Health at the time. So that should probably be another thing that needs to be done.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We got
okay, we time for one more quick call, then we got to close.
Aloha, caller.
Close the show here. Caller.
Aloha, you guys. Thanks very much for the show. I don't have second or third hand. I just have a question, which is, you know, I keep hearing over and over and over and over about how these exports are bringing in 246 to 256 million per year is the number that I keep seeing.
So approximately $250 million?
Yes. And my question is, it doesn't stay here, so how can they claim that is an import value to the state of Hawaii? Because the money doesn't stay here other than the salary.
Well, it comes here and then it leaves, yeah?
Well, yeah. And it's just like the seeds. Because when those guys were on Felicia's show, it was a wonderful conversation, and they mentioned augmentation. And that farmers and people who need the seed on the in the mainland will send the seeds here, and then we are forced to grow more. By, you know, they force the land to grow more. They package it all up, and they ship it back off. And then later, more comes back for augmentation. That's just not growing food. That's just, you know, so this whole conversation where everybody keeps talking about, you know, that some implication that there's some food involved in this is what really bothers me, because that's not food, you know?
All right. Right. Well, thanks for that perspective, caller.
Yeah, I really would like to see an accounting from these guys about how much really does stay here beyond the wages, and don't pay the spending value of the wages, because that would happen no matter what.
Right.
Don't
hold your breath on that.
Yeah.
Okay, aloha. Okay, well, that's all the time we have in the show. Stay tuned. Coming up next, we have a special mystery guest on the Acoustic Luau. Check it out. Okay, Jonathan, thanks for all the help on the show.
Sure. Well, I want to let folks know that next week we'll be actually back.
That's right. We'll be back because Jimmy Trujillo's
Jimmy
got
Trujillo's,
a conflict, so he's going to be...
he's going to spend some quality time with his sweetie pie. And we are going to get to a story we've been wanting to cover for a while, but we haven't been able to yet, and that's the whole Edward Snowden affair. So I'm really looking forward to the show next week and talk all about Edward Snowden.
Aloha. See you back here next week.
Hey, ahui ho.
Thanks for all the calls.